Ever trace the roots of your family tree? What did you find? It's the Lee Rayburn Show. In this hour, we take a look at genealogy as there is an increased push for it right now due to a new rule for immigration in Canada that says you can go many, many generations back, and if you can prove your Canadian ancestry, that gives you the right to Canadian citizenship. And that has seen an influx of folks trying to trace their family tree all the way back to Canada. And there seems to be a link in Wisconsin to French Canadians. Perhaps you have that in your family tree. If you have a question about genealogy, you are welcome to our conversation this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email to talk@WPR.org. Our genealogist this hour, Rebecca Hopman. Hopman is the Genealogy Services Librarian for the Wisconsin Historical Society, online at wisconsinhistory.org. And Rebecca, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
I appreciate you being here. Also joining us, Janelle Aslan, who is the owner and operator of Prairie Roots Genealogy, and I believe the website for that is prairierootsgenealogy.com. I can't say it, but that's right. Right, Janelle?
Yes, that's correct. Nice to be here, Lee.
Hey, welcome to you. And Rebecca, let me start with you. Have we seen an increase in requests for genealogy records that would trace back to Canada?
We certainly have. It's been one of our most popular questions from visitors and people emailing and calling us for about the last 6-7 months since the change went into effect.
And Janelle, how would you characterize the current interest among Wisconsin folks for their Canadian ancestry, specifically French Canadian?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely surging right now. And I think, a lot of people associate states like New Hampshire and Vermont and Michigan with French Canadian ancestry. And certainly those places have a lot of French Canadian descendants there, but Wisconsin does too. And it's definitely created a big uptick of interest in it in Wisconsin specifically, and people reaching out who maybe want to navigate the resources at the Historical Society, but aren't local, but have connections to Wisconsin from out of state.
From Prairie Roots Genealogy, I see that your parents were born in Michigan to parents who were born in Michigan. But do you have French Canadian ancestry that you found?
I do, very much so, which I always knew about myself from a young age. My great grandfather, who I inherited the surname Aslan from, was born in Quebec in 1861. And so my grandfather grew up fully French Canadian, knowing all about his ancestry. But as I dug into genealogy, once I got interested in it as I got older, I discovered that only 2 of my 8 great-grandparents did not come from Canada or were not descended from Canadian parents or grandparents themselves. So it turned out that I was extremely French Canadian. And also, in addition to that, I think something that a lot of people don't think of is I'm also Irish Canadian. And a big reason for that is it was cheaper for a long time for Irish people to immigrate to Canada because it was all part of the British Empire. And so they could easily come over to Canada, and a lot of them then came south to the United States, but some of them stayed for generations or more. And so part of my heritage is also from Canadians who were Irish, not just French, too.
We've got a couple callers, but before we get to them, Rebecca, what we know at the Wisconsin Historical Society, are there stories about why French Canadians immigrated to Wisconsin specifically?
That's a really great question. You know, people immigrated to our state for all sorts of reasons. Often a specific industry would draw them in, economic opportunities. Maybe there was family already here. And so, there was a bit of chain migration where someone came and established themselves or a community was established and some more folks followed along. So there's a lot of different reasons that people came to Wisconsin, including French Canadians.
Well, and I saw in the story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that there was a large request for proof of citizenship in northeastern Wisconsin. Are there specific pockets of our state where we would find French Canadian ancestry?
That is a really great question. You know, I am not specifically sure, but I do know that, like you said, northeastern Wisconsin, I know Brown County has been getting a lot of requests up there. So that is that does seem like a part of the state that's getting a little more attention from these people seeking dual citizenship.
Let's go to your questions next for our genealogists at 1-800-642-1234. And we'll start with Tom in Rhinelander. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was lucky enough to stumble on a genealogy done by a distant relative a few years ago, and I've worked from that and found that I am the descendant of several French-Canadian voyageurs, and I found lots of fascinating information about where they traveled, and I would like to apply for Canadian citizenship. I don't have any intention of moving, but I think it would just be a fun thing to do. But the last French-Canadian ancestor who lived in Canada lived in the Red River Territory and in the early 1800s moved to Prairie du Chien. And I'm suspecting she was born in a place where there's not going to be any birth certificate. But there's some good genealogies, including a published one. And my question is whether there are other documents that will suffice instead of birth certificates. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Tom, a great question. And fortunately for us, we have the genealogy services librarian for the Wisconsin Historical Society here. Rebecca?
Sure. Yes, those earlier ancestors in the early 1800s, there may not always be that civil vital record from Wisconsin State. So just a little history. So Wisconsin as a state became a state in 1848 and did mandate the collection of vital records in 1852, but counties weren't necessarily quick to pick up on that and be comprehensive in their vital record collection until much later in the century. Really, the 1880s is when we start to see a lot of those birth, marriage, and death records. So often when I am helping people find alternative records, I point them for earlier ancestors when there's not a vital record. I point them towards church records, you know, those birth and baptismal records that would have been issued at a church can often be a really good alternate record when you're looking for that evidence. Now, I can't speak to specifically what the Canadian government would accept, but I suspect that a religious record could be an option, and maybe Janelle can confirm, because I know she's worked with people who are going through that dual citizenship process and more specifically address the particular records that you need.
Janelle Aslin with Prairie Roots Genealogy and Madison-based, what is the Canadian government looking for specifically when it comes to proving some ancestry and gaining some citizenship?
Yeah, so the main things they're looking for are those vital records that connect generations. And so, you know, a birth registration of any sort is really kind of the cornerstone of these applications. And if people have, you know, written genealogies and things like that, it's a great resource. But the actual Canadian government is going to want to see the real original records. And they have also specified, and there's been a little bit of confusion around, they want color copies from the, I think they say, the issuing authority. And so one of the ways this works in Canada is that for a long time in Canadian history, they didn't really have civil vital record registration the way we do here in Wisconsin, where you can get a birth certificate and death certificate. Instead, it was actually the Catholic Church's baptisms, marriages, and death burial records were then sent by the parish priests to the government and counted as that registration. Now, if you are French Canadian, most people descended from French Canadians, those people were Catholic, so that's great. Unfortunately, if you are not descended from Catholics, this leaves a big gap in the records. When there wasn't any other sort of like actual government process for registering births, especially back as far as our caller Tom's family in the early 1800s, in that situation in Canada, you're almost always relying on the religious records or other records. And if you can't find kind of those explicit records that say, you know, so-and-so was born on this day and baptized on this day, and their parents are these people, what you really need to do is kind of build a case for this ancestor having been born in Canada and who their parents were. And that might include census records from Canada or, you know, other sort of like legal documents, probate records. There's a number of records that can be used, and it gets more complicated the further back you go.
Well, and before we get back to the calls, and we will do that, I want to turn my attention back to the Genealogy Services Librarian for the Wisconsin Historical Society, Rebecca, because you have census records collections, you have religious record collections, you have immigration record collections, but what's the most popular for those who are seeking dual citizenship at our Historical Society?
Yeah, we have a lot of really fantastic Wisconsin record collections, as you mentioned, and it really is, there's a few that we see the most people who are interested in this dual citizenship process pursuing. So that is our pre-1907 Wisconsin vital records collection. So that includes civil birth, marriage, and death records issued in the state of Wisconsin before October 1st, 1907. After October 1st, the Wisconsin Vital Records Office has those later vital records. So that's number one for sure, that people, like Janelle is saying, you know, the government is looking for that proof of birth and parentage connections. So those vital records, we have a lot of people accessing our naturalization records. So if your ancestor was naturalized in a Wisconsin state court, we have most of those naturalization records as well. And then also, like you mentioned, the census. We have people who are looking specifically, the federal census is very widely available on a lot of genealogy websites and databases. But the Wisconsin state census, between 1855 and 1905, every 10 years, Wisconsin had its own census. And some of those census records are also what people are looking for to prove that their ancestor was a resident in the state. And you know, with the naturalization proved when they, you know, if and when they naturalized to become a U.S. citizen. So I would say those vital records, the naturalization paperwork, and the state census are the three top records that I see people requesting. But also, as you mentioned, religious records, we do have some of those religious records for the state of Wisconsin, or for churches in the state of Wisconsin, religious groups in the state of Wisconsin at the Historical Society. Janelle mentioned those Catholic records. There are certain denominations that have their own archives. So like if your ancestors were Catholic, the different dioceses in the state of Wisconsin will have those, you know, birth and baptismal records. But we do have some collections of original church records for other denominations in Wisconsin.
We have such a rich history, and I guess I hadn't even considered how deep our historical records could get and how vast they could be. We'll return our attention to your calls and questions next for our guest, genealogist Rebecca Hopman from the Wisconsin Historical Society and Janelle Aslin from Prairie Roots Genealogy at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. We'll go to Alex in Shawano County next. Alex, hi.
Hello. I'm wondering about the accuracy of these genetic heritage tests because I did three different companies, and the first two companies' reports were very much in accordance within a few percentage of my family lore. But the third company, they were way off. I mean, they completely eliminated my British and German and Austrian and French heritage, and they made me Baltic and Russian, 98%.
Well, how about that, Alex? And Janelle, this is part of your story, too, because you mentioned Irish-Canadian before, and it made me think twice, but this is part of the new role of DNA in genealogy, and you've sort of had some work with it yourself.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I think a few things that the general public doesn't necessarily know about these commercial DNA tests from places like, you know, Ancestry, MyHeritage, and things like that is that first of all, our DNA isn't passed down evenly. So it's, you know, I have actually a lot of Irish DNA, even though I actually have more French Canadian ancestors. And that's just because I have inherited the traits of my Irish ancestors more than I did of my French Canadian ancestors. and especially more than my unfortunate German and, you know, Lithuanian ancestors who I carry nothing from. But, you know, what shows up on these DNA tests is actually what we're carrying that is often, you know, our physical traits and things like that. And it's not necessarily a perfect correlation to the actual ancestors we had. Because when you think about things like recessive genes, you know, maybe your great-great-great-grandfather had blue eyes, but that didn't pass along because that was recessive. And so kind of the genetics that you inherit impact what shows up on these DNA tests, and it's not a perfect match for the actual heritage. And the other thing is that these databases are testing against their other users. Hmm. So you are being compared with whoever else they have in their data set. And so if they aren't testing in certain areas, or they have an audience that's predominantly from one group or another, they're making guesses at the heritage based on who else they have in their system and kind of what they've discovered about these people. And that's why in some ways going with the largest company possible is going to give you the largest possible comparison, because you're comparing to a larger group and it's going to be slightly more accurate. But a lot of those ethnicity estimates are described as estimates for a reason, because they're also kind of guessing at it too, these companies.
And using the data that they have on hand, well, genealogy would be more with the documentation that you can trace back to your family. And Alex, it's a perfect question. Thanks for the call. We'll go to Kira in Oshkosh next. Kira, hi.
Hi.
What do you have for us?
I'm an Indigenous person, and I'm just wondering, like, if you know how Canada is handling that, because we didn't have borders. That only happened because of colonization.
Yeah. You make a great point, Kira, and I'm so glad you asked. And Rebecca, what would you say from the perspective of the Wisconsin Historical Society about Indigenous people of Wisconsin having to prove their ancestry somehow?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I am not sure exactly what the Canadian government's parameters are around for dual citizenship applications for Indigenous folks. We certainly have a lot of Indigenous people and communities in the state of Wisconsin, and you know, they show up in a lot of the same records depending on the time period as other Wisconsinites, but there's certainly a different history and a different set of records that you want to be looking for. But yeah, as far as applying for dual citizenship, I'm not quite sure how they are, how the Canadian government is, you know, if they're asking for certain types of records or if there's a different set of circumstances. That is a really great question.
Janelle, do you have any insight into this?
Yeah, I mean, I think like Rebecca said, a lot of it you can utilize similar records, especially when you're talking more recent history. A lot of Indigenous people will have the same records that everyone else in Wisconsin is accessing. And I do think like a lot of it depends on if your connection to Canada is through, say, a French Canadian who married an Indigenous woman, which is the case in my ancestry, and you can trace then those people through the records. I found a marriage record for my ancestors in Green Bay, of all places, because it was a French fort in the 1700s. And so like some of those instances were documented, including children being born and baptized. But of course, like you said, Indigenous people didn't keep the same types of records, especially earlier on in history. So to be honest, I think depending on how complex your situation is, it might be worth talking to an immigration attorney. I would just make sure everyone out there understands that in terms of this law, what the Canadian government is saying is not that you need to be approved as a Canadian citizen, as much as you are already a Canadian citizen. You just have to show the paperwork. And then once they say, yes, we can see that you are a Canadian, you get the paperwork. But according to their laws, they're saying that all of these people descended from Canadians are already Canadians. And the purpose of the law is because their previous law was overturned as unconstitutional and unconstitutionally affecting people of marginalized groups, women, and especially people of color because of kind of how citizenship could be passed down. And so it specifically is meant to address those gaps. So I am certain that the Canadian government has some sort of approach to Indigenous records and kind of the fact that the borders that Europeans created were not the borders of Indigenous people. So I would definitely reach out to a lawyer or you know, look at the Canadian government's resources and see what they might say.
Kira, I apologize that the answers might be unclear, but the point is very well taken. There are people who have been here since before the borders were drawn, and that should be taken into respect, into some, you know, should be respected. And I very much hope it is. And I thank you for the call. We'll go to Joe in Eau Claire next. Joe, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I live in Eau Claire, and as far as I know, this community was colonized by a bunch of Norwegians. But just up the river in Chippewa Falls, there was a strong French influence at one point. My wife was a French teacher, and she used to take her students up to cemeteries there, and the headstones, some of the older headstones would still be in French. Huh. And I think about the only remnant of the French name. Oh, they have a good display on the voyageurs at the museum they have there, and they have a rendezvous every spring there where people play the role of the early voyageurs.
In Chippewa Falls?
This is in Chippewa Falls, yeah. You will not find much French spoken there today, except they still have something called the Frenchtown Annual Tube Float and Regalia, which they bill as the largest flute float tube in the world, tube float. I avoid it. Some alcohol is consumed during this thing. But
still, may be able to trace back to our French-Canadian ancestry. That's outstanding. But you did mention the French cemetery there. And Rebecca, you do have cemetery records at our Wisconsin Historical Society.
Yeah, we do. So a lot of what we have are indexes of cemeteries. So a lot of fantastic genealogical societies, historical societies, genealogists, public-minded history people over the years have gone through cemeteries and written down, you know, all of the information on the headstones of people who are buried there. So we have a lot of these things in published books in our collections. We do have a very limited number of other kind of cemetery records in our archival collections, but cemetery records are super popular for exploring, where your ancestors buried. Maybe there's something on the tombstone that fills in a gap that you didn't know before. And I want to mention really quick, our latest caller mentioned Chippewa Falls and Eau Claire. So one of the great things about the Wisconsin Historical Society's collection that's pretty unique, I think, when it comes to organizations like ours is we have a series of area research centers that are spread out across the state of Wisconsin. So, for example, for folks with ancestry in Chippewa Falls, if you have French Canadian ancestry in Chippewa Falls, the naturalization records and some of those other, the vital records, some of the other main records we're talking about for dual citizenship purposes can be accessed locally at the Eau Claire Area Research Center. So we have these 14 research centers spread across the state where we keep those regionally specific records. Now we can transfer them between any other research center. So if you live in Dane County and you don't want to drive up to Eau Claire, we can have them transferred down to our headquarters in Madison. But I like to remind folks that we do have our records spread out across the state so that it's easy for people to access them at a location near to them. So if you have those, and maybe you attend that festival or that fair and you want to see if your French Canadian ancestor naturalized in the county of Chippewa, that's something that, you know, the Eau Claire Area Research Center would be able to help you with.
That's Rebecca Hopman, Genealogy Services Librarian for our Wisconsin Historical Society, online at wisconsinhistory.org. Also joining us, Janelle Aslin, owner and operator of Prairie Roots Genealogy, online at prairierootsgenealogy.com. And your questions about climbing the family tree when we continue next. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News. We'll be right back. Taking a look at the ties between Canadian ancestry and the people who are in Wisconsin today, and there is a new push for Wisconsin for Canadian citizenship due to the changes in the laws there. And I'd said earlier that it was for a naturalization process, but as our guest Janelle Aslin mentioned, they're already Canadian citizens as long as they can find the documentation to prove it, and there is a great push to do so right now. We are seeing stories of that. We are seeing delays in the issuing of citizenship in Canada as a result. And we are taking your stories, which have been fascinating so far, and let's get right back to it with our guest, Janelle Aslin, owner and operator of Prairie Roots Genealogy, and Rebecca Hopman, Genealogy Services Librarian for our Wisconsin Historical Society. Let's go to Paul in La Crosse next. Paul, hi.
Hi, yeah. I'm pretty, 95% sure or almost certain that my dad's mom, so my grandma on my dad's side, her parents, basically my grandparents, I guess, on my dad's side, but my grandma's parents were French-Canadian. One of them was French-Canadian. And my question is, if I got the citizenship, not citizenship, if I got the birth certificate or something similar to that, would I either be Canadian citizenship, dual citizenship, or what else would I have to do to prove that?
Janelle Aslin, what does Paul need to prove that he has some French Canadian ancestry on his paternal grandparent side?
Yeah, so the Canadian government, if you go to their Information Refugees and Citizenship Canada page, they have a great walkthrough where you can kind of select, I'm looking for citizenship, and you can say citizenship by descent. There's an application on there that lays out what you need, as well as a checklist of the types of documents. It includes things like you have to send a copy of your ID and, your Wisconsin ID or your passport, a photo of yourself. And I will warn you, it is not the same size as the U.S. passport photo. It is slightly different.
It's Canadian.
But I will say, yes, it's just a quarter of an inch different, which is really annoying. But I have found that I got mine done at a Walgreens here in Madison.
Okay.
So they do have the capability to do that. But then what they're really looking for in addition to that is the documentation of these relationships. So they want your birth certificate. If your name is different than what's on your birth certificate, you need a record that explains why, whether that's, you were married or you had a gender change or whatever the case may be. So documentation of that. And then you can use, your birth certificate will have your parents' names for most people. And then you have their birth certificates, which connect to their parents and so on. And as we were talking about earlier, the further back you go, the less likely you are to find kind of those official government certificates. So you might have to look to things like religious records. And what the Canadian government is looking for is color copies, they say, from the issuing authority. They don't necessarily have to be certified copies, but getting certified copies might help your case because it allows them to see, this is an official document. It's, stamped or notarized or whatever the case may be. One thing that many of us have discovered as we have applied is, for instance, the primary holder of kind of religious records and vital records in Canada is Library and Archives Canada. And so for a lot of people trying to prove their connection into Canada, they have to prove who that ancestor was that was born there. And so they need that, birth registration for that ancestor as well to prove that final link in the chain. And the Library and Archives Canada, the cost for a certified copy is astronomical.
Oh.
I paid $350 US for mine. So just to bear in mind. However, they have said they will accept a color copy that doesn't have to be certified. So having the certified copy is extra insurance that you're not going to get an issue once you submit your application. But it's not necessarily a must-have if the rest of the documentation feels really solid. So if you are looking for those records and you reach out to the Library and Archives Canada, just know that you can request just a color copy from their archives and you don't have to pay the money for the certified copy if you are fine taking kind of that risk, knowing it is a long process and it might take a while to find out if they have issues with your application. Well, and as Lee said, it is a long wait right now, so be warned.
The latest I saw was about a year because of the backlog that exists now as a result of these new laws. So we've got a link to the Canadian government website for applying for a citizenship, shortcuts at wpr.org/Lee. Janelle mentioned that checklist of documentation that you'd need. Rebecca Hopman, what can the Wisconsin Historical Society do with that checklist, and how would I go about next steps for somebody like Paul?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think, right, in Paul's case, we've got several generations. Sometimes you've got, you know, fewer generations, more generations, but making sure that you're taking that checklist and applying it to every generation where you need to connect back to that Canadian ancestor. So you are more than welcome. Anyone is welcome. We're free and open to the public to walk through our doors, email us, call us, for help finding those documents in our Wisconsin records collection. So our collection spans the United States and Canada. So we have records for many, many people outside of Wisconsin in our collection. But when it comes to those original records, like those birth, marriage, and death records, you know, census records, naturalization paperwork, religious records, we're going to have those original Wisconsin records. If you come to us and you say, I'm trying to, you know, get Canadian dual citizenship and I need to prove this many ancestors in Wisconsin back to Canada, what we can do is we can help you look for those particular records. Now, we can't necessarily take a list of ancestors from you and do the searching ourselves, but we are very happy to help get you started. We'll show you how to use our collections. We'll show you how you can investigate your ancestors in our collection. We have, for example, at wisconsinhistory.org, a free searchable index of all of those Wisconsin civil birth, marriage, and death records created before October 1st, 1907. So if you just go on our website and you use that just general search, I recommend starting with the family surname, that last name, and you can narrow it down to our vital records collection. It helps if you know the county your ancestor was born in and the year or the approximate date. That'll really help narrow down your results. But you can see on our website, you know, 24/7 free if we even have the record. And if we don't, or if you're not sure, you know, you're having trouble with the search and you need a little assistance, if you just contact us, you can email us at asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org, or you can call us at 608-264-6535. And again, you're welcome to come in too if you're in the area. We are more than happy to help you search that index and make sure whether or not we have that vital record for your ancestor. And then, again, can really help guide you to the parts of our collection that are going to be most useful in that gathering of records for your dual citizenship application.
Rebecca, would you recommend I start at the Library and Archives on Library Mall here in Madison or one of the 14 area research centers, or would it depend?
You know, that's a great question. So if you, you know, kind of know what records you need, let's say your ancestors lived in Winnebago County, for example, UW Oshkosh is going to have that Oshkosh Area Research Center. So you're more than welcome to reach out to them, contact them. You can go in person, just make sure to check their website for their policies. But we are always happy to help get you started. If you're not really sure or you don't know the county or town that the ancestor lived in at a certain point, just contact us at the Wisconsin Historical Society. What we do if the records are located in one of our area research centers is eventually we'll say, okay, if you want to look at this record, contact Oshkosh. But please do reach out to us at any point in the process. And if you're not sure who to contact, contact us and we will get you to the right place.
Librarians are helpers. It's what librarians do, always. And we appreciate them for it. Let's go to Paul and Hurley next. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. This is a very interesting discussion and topic. Now, I'm up in Hurley, and Hurley historically has been predominantly Italian. And wherever there was mining in America, you had significant Italian settlements, whether Iron Mountain, Michigan, Hurley, Hibbing, Minnesota, Calumet, Michigan, Bessemer, Rock Springs, Wyoming, whatever. But in regard to French Canadians, Saxon, Wisconsin, Washburn, and Somerset had very large French Canadian communities. And you can see it from the names of the churches in a number of those places. In Saxon, St. Anne de Beaupré, in Washburn, St. Louis, and in Lake Linden, Michigan, in the Copper Country, that town traditionally is 70% French Canadian, and there's a magnificent church built in the heyday of mining, St. Joseph's, which is all of the signage is entirely in French, and it's really worth a visit if you want to go up to the Keweenaw.
Paul, hold on. Let me stop you there because you seem to know so much, and I'm still trying to figure out why we have this deep connection between certain places in Wisconsin and our French-Canadian ancestry. Do you have a story as to why that may be or was something you've heard about it?
Well, first of all, the proximity to Canada.
Sure.
And French Canadians came first because of the lumber industry and went to areas where there was a lot of lumbering.
Hmm.
But I wanted to mention also the English Canadians. One of the persons being interviewed mentioned her family being Irish, partly, from Canada. Almost all of the Irish who came to the Lake Superior region came by way of Canada. The saying used to be that they came down from Canada, when in fact they probably came up from Canada. And the result is, even though there weren't in terms of the total population, English-speaking Canadians gave us our dialect. Our Upper Midwest dialect is English-Canadian because the Irish, the English-speaking Canadians, the Scots-Canadians, even though they may not have been a majority of the population, they were some of the earliest settlers, and they were many of the teachers, the professional people, the bankers, a lot of the merchants, etc. So, in fact, our dialect is really English Canadian. And then finally, here's an amusing story, which one of my aunts told me, especially given the discussion today about immigrants. One of my aunts told me that years ago, there was a guy in Hurley who was a banker and was in insurance and real estate. And he had come down from Canada. His background was Scots. And he was a poll watcher. His job was to, at election time, eject from the polling lines the Italians, the Poles, the Finns, the Swedes, the Jews, the other people who were not citizens. Well, having done this for many years, it was discovered that he himself was not a citizen, but he could speak English.
Oh, Paul, that is a lot to take in. I appreciate that, and I don't think poll watcher means what it used to mean. And I had no idea that our dialect in Wisconsin was English-Canadian or had some English-Canadian roots. Janelle, did you know any of that?
Yeah, actually, it's funny he mentioned Lake Linden. That's actually where my grandmother was born,
who
is French-Canadian. And that church is where she was baptized.
Oh, wow.
And I've been to services there because I have a lot of family connections there. And She was both Irish Canadian and French Canadian, and as he said, Lake Linden was a huge French Canadian community, and mining not only drew the Italians but also Cornish people, and so that's why we have pasties in northern Wisconsin and in Michigan, and a lot of those people came through Canada as well for the same reason that the Irish and the English did. So it is really interesting how much this area of like the upper Midwest around the Great Lakes has really been impacted by our connection to Canada. And I give talks about kind of that connection and the interconnection between the two areas. And As a funny story from my own heritage, so my great-grandfather, my grandmother, who was born in Lakeland, and her father, his name was Thomas O'Rourke, and he was born in Ontario, just across the Detroit River from Detroit in Ontario. And he was, you know, third generation Canadian, he was Irish, and he moved to Upper Michigan and opened a bar, unsurprisingly, as an Irishman. And my grandmother swore her whole life that the bar did not operate during Prohibition, and that it became a soda parlor. And, you know, because she was a very, you know, she didn't want to admit her father would do that. And all of us always said, he literally ran a bar on a lake that opened to Lake Superior, and Canada was a major source of liquor. Like, there's no way. And his brothers worked for Walker Distillery in Ontario. So it's, you know, these areas have even in Prohibition been very closely connected, despite the attempts of borders.
I believe that is part of the story of the border between Detroit and Windsor would have to be what happened there during Prohibition and the organized crime that sort of evolved as a result of the times. Paul, you're a font of information. I thank you so much for the call. I want to get to a few more callers while we have the time. And Rod in Minnesota will go to you next. Hi, Rod.
How you doing?
Good, sir. What do you have?
This is Rod, USMC, Irish, Mexican, Indian, and German. And my grandma on my mom's side was Irish and German. Grandpa was German. My dad's side, my grandma was Mexican, Yaqui Apache Indian. And his father was a Mohican Indian. I'd like to know a little more about the Mohican Indians that actually came into Wisconsin. I believe they're northeastern Wisconsin. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Janelle, I'll begin with you. Do we have any records about our Mohicans in Wisconsin?
I mean, I think the unfortunate thing about researching Indigenous ancestors is that, you know, kind of the ways the U.S. government treated Indigenous people throughout our history is evident in the actual records, because you have large gaps in records. And of course, a lot of Indigenous communities didn't maintain records the way that European civilizations did. So they don't have their own records even necessarily. They have more oral tradition and history. And so a lot of what we have are evidence of relocations and movements like that. But one of the things that really complicates it is that at certain stretches of U.S. government or of U.S. history, the census takers, for instance, were told to count Native people as white if they were living in quote unquote white settlements, aka not living on reservations or in primarily Indigenous communities. So anyone, or they were just marked colored as a blanket, you know, application of anyone non-white. So that can really cause problems with researching that. And it can be a big brick wall for a lot of people researching their Indigenous history. So I think when you're in that situation, the best thing you can do is really look at, there's a lot of guides online to researching Indigenous ancestors and kind of the records that might be useful. And if I can just say, like, as a researcher, the Wisconsin Historical Society is such an asset for all of us in the state. I mean, I think I've lived a lot of other places in this country, and I am always blown away. And also the reading room in Madison is stunning.
A palace.
Stunning to research in. Yeah. But also just the actual resources that they give us access to and the help that they can provide. I always encourage people to reach out to them.
I believe it is the oldest continuously funded historical society in the United States, Rebecca Hopman. And what do you have in terms of our Native history that could be helpful?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. Like Janelle said, it can get a little complicated because of the way that Indigenous people were documented and how they documented themselves. So in some cases, it can be easier to look at the federal records, which we could certainly help connect people to. So that's not something we would have necessarily in our library, but we may have published indexes or can connect you to the kind of federal records that you might want to look for. And again, like Janelle said, and like our earlier caller with Indigenous ancestry, You know, Indigenous people do show up in, you know, a lot of the same records that non-Indigenous folks show up in, especially, you know, later on. There very well could be vital records, or they're documented in the census, or, you know, maybe there's a community newspaper. We do have some Indigenous newspapers in our collection for certain parts of Wisconsin that can help share a lot of that community history. So, yeah, I think if you want to reach out to us with a little more of the specifics, if you want to email us at asklibrary@wisconsinhistory.org or give us a call, we are more than happy to dig into our collections and see what we can share from our collections that's going to be most useful for your search. But, yeah, it really it depends on the time, and this is for anyone, too. It depends on the time. It depends on the part of Wisconsin. But for Indigenous folks, there is that extra challenge of just historically how they've been documented, you know, in United States records.
Rod, thank you for the call and the reminder. Let's go to Mike in Bayfield next. Mike, hi.
Hi.
What do you have for us today?
My question is there any special processes for those of us that are descendants of the Acadians that were evicted from Canada in 1750? My last ancestor that lived his life in Canada was probably born in 1671. And my ancestry is well documented, so I have a lot of records.
Rebecca, do we know about the Acadians that were kicked out of Canada in the 18th century?
Gosh, you know, I don't know if there is a specific, you know, difference in this application process with for dual citizenship. That may be something that Janelle could answer, but certainly, you know, I'm glad that you have great documentation, because some of those, when you get to those earlier ancestors in the 1600s and the 1700s and even the early 1800s, you know, Wisconsin, as part of the Northwest Territory, kind of came under U.S. control in the early 1800s. But it's many, many decades after that that a lot of those kind of main Wisconsin records are a little easier to find. But yeah, maybe Janelle would have some thoughts about the Acadians in particular, because I am not certain about that.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the Acadians, there's no special process. And okay. Of course, the time period is a major complication, because as our caller said, the Acadians were kicked out of what we now kind of think of as the Maritimes region of Canada in the 1700s, and a lot of this had to do with British ownership of Canada and a lot of history I'm not gonna go into, but a lot of these people were moved to Louisiana or moved into the United States for their own safety after being after the expulsion from Acadia. What I will say is that a lot of these people were Catholic, and if they moved to other predominantly French regions in the United States, religious records, again, will really be an asset to you. And the nice thing about this change in Canadian law is there is not a limit to how far back your connection to Canada can be. Oh, like, wow. It's there. If your 10th great-grandparent was born in Canada and you can prove it with the records, then you could get approved. So it's really just about using that documentation and making those connections, no matter how far back it is.
Hey, Janelle, I want to thank you so much for being part of a fascinating hour that we will clearly have to do it again, because we have more questions to answer than we had time to ask. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
And Rebecca, for all the resources that our Wisconsin Historical Society provides and for everything that you provided today, I welcome you back as well. And it will have to be a visit your archives and library soon, because it's stunning. Thank you.
Please do. Thanks for having me on today.
We'll do it again. Rebecca Hopman, Genealogy Services Librarian for the Wisconsin Historical Society, online at wisconsinhistory.org. Janelle Aslin, owner and operator of Prairie Roots Genealogy, online at prairierootsgenealogy.com. Sorry we didn't get to everybody, but thanks to everybody for being a part of the show, including our team. And stay tuned tomorrow for Garden Talk with Jill Nadeau from 11 to 1. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News.